Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Hey, welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanner, Brian Myers in studio. We got also Ron at, producing. We couldn't do this without Ron. Ron, thank you so much. We probably don't thank you often enough.
Oh, you're welcome.
You are truly the magic behind the show. You make it happen. So we really appreciate that, Brian.
He's stroking me, isn't he?
Brian's looking impatient. So you look like you got to buy a car or something.
Is it written on my forehead?
Yeah,
must buy a car.
No, you know what? I got it done.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I still have to finish up the paperwork this afternoon, but yeah.
So what are you purchasing?
Oh, just, these cars that we're buying for the business.
Yeah.
It's a 2003 Honda CR-V.
Okay, cool.
But it's going to be perfect for what we need it for. I mean,
yeah.
We put 50,000, 60,000 miles Definitely. A year on these things.
And you need all-wheel drive just to get
it
out of your...
That's right.
In the wintertime, out of your
right.
house.
That's right. And, we got to have a lot of cargo space for the stuff that
right.
we're hauling around here and there. So, I'm relieved.
Good. All right.
What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Doesn't seem like a whole lot now the Iowa caucus is done. At least I'm not going to events every night. So, that's been good.
Does your family think that's good?
Well, I'm not. The verdict's out on that. So, yeah, my wife's looking at me. Could you just leave and go someplace? You're starting to annoy me.
Did that really happen?
No.
Cheryl,
no.
Are you listening? You hear what Shane's saying?
He's spoofing us, you know.
Yeah. Whatever.
She's actually pretty busy with school, so she's coming home. She's right now. It's a busy time for her because she works for a law office and then works at the Capitol. So, part time for both because
so she's burning the candle.
She
on
reduces
both ends
her hours
already.
At the law office so she could clerk at the state Capitol and then coming back. And she's taking just one class and doing homework for that. So.
Well, I trust that she's been able to tell the difference, between now and before the caucuses.
Right. Right. Our mailbox isn't quite as full either, so that's been nice. So,
enough about all that.
Right. Hey, we have a very special guest on the line. She's joined our show before and actually spoke at our first Caffeinated Thoughts briefing, Chelsea Vaccari. She's the Evangelical Program Director with the Institute on Religion and Democracy out in Washington, D.C. She's the author of Distortion, How the New Christian Left is Twisting the Gospel, Damaging the Faith. And she wrote an article on CBN responding to basically this whole didn't realize it was going to be in a controversy last Saturday, but during the last GOP debate, three of the candidates were asked about their position on selected women and having to register for selective service, and three of them said yes. That would be Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, I believe, and then Chris Christie, who's now dropped out of the race. Bye-bye, Chris. We'll miss you. Anyway, so now you got two candidates running who said, hey, we are in favor of your laugh.
By the way, Chelsea, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, yeah.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
I know I left my manner at home, but I was going to get to that. So I just I had to take a breath first, see. So, Chelsea, as we talked to you before when we first called you and said, hey, this is a conversation Brian and I were going to have, but I'm interested in your perspective because of the being a female,
exactly.
you probably have a different perspective of mine. My first thought when I heard these guys say this, being a father of two daughters, that if the draft was reinstituted, my daughters are going to be drafted in the military over my dead body, and that mm-hmm. got an interesting reaction from some people. Some people are saying, oh, what's the problem with that? Equal opportunity. Others, liked it and said, totally agreed with me. So where do you stand?
Right. So thank you, first of all, for saying that you would not let your daughter register for a selective service. I appreciate hearing that from Christian men. But yeah, so I don't come at this just from a woman. I don't come at this just from a cultural commentator either. I come at this from a Christian woman and also the wife of a Navy veteran and the daughter of a Marine, two men who sacrificed themselves to serve their country for a time. My husband's still in reserve. But look, this isn't just hypothetical either. I just want it to be known that we're not just talking about the endorsement by the Republican candidates on Saturday. On February 2nd, two senior military leaders, they said openly that women should be required to register for the draft now that all of the restrictions by the Obama administration have been taken down for women in direct combat. So this is something that we really are seriously looking at maybe in the future. So I want to just make sure our listeners know that. But we're also talking about not women who are serving in the military, because I want to make it known I'm so grateful for women who do serve right now and the sacrifices they make and being away from their family. I don't want to ignore them.
Right.
I am so grateful for them. But we're talking about the potential of bringing women forcibly in who would have to, what they would do is they'd have to register their names in the selective service, and then if a draft happened, then certain women would be chosen and drafted up into combat. Now, what worries me as a woman, yes, is that this could overlap with young women who are fertile and who might have young children. What if these are women who are nursing toddlers and infants? These are questions that we have not explored at all, that the candidates who made very rash statements of endorsement, I don't think they've considered. And it's something I think that we as Christians need to think deeply about, which is why I and my colleagues over at the IRD, why we're calling on Christian leaders to really look at this deeply and to oppose it ultimately, and to encourage their congregants to think about it and to also oppose it. Because women and men are created by God with intrinsic differences. And what those who are advocating for encouraging women to register for public service are overlooking is that we are different, and that's okay.
Right. I totally agree. And I was encouraged by Senator Cruz's response. He didn't get a chance to answer the question, but he did the next day. He said, I was listening to these guys say this, and I thought, you guys are nuts. And that was my thought, too. Because National Review had a great article on this, too. An editorial they wrote saying, basically, this violates natural law as well. And I thought that was an interesting perspective, because you pointed out too, men and women are created differently. My natural instinct as a father and as a husband is to protect my daughters and my wife. Not to hide behind them, not to expect them to, you know, fight my battles, not to expect them to go off to war. I mean, the concept is so foreign to how I'm wired as a man, and especially as a Christian man, that it's just appalling to me that some people think this is okay.
Right. And again, I'm so thankful for men like you, men like my colleague Mark Levecki, who are saying, you know what, no, I'm not going to let women go in my stead and fight in direct combat against enemies. No, I'm not going to do that. And my colleague Mark Levecki brings up gallantry, right? Men have this natural predisposition towards gallantry, and they need to be expected to put themselves in place of where women would be maybe harm. So I think that I don't know if you saw this, but Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, friends of mine, Owen Stratton and Greg Gibson, they wrote this amazing piece that goes right along with what you're saying, and they titled it, We Will Not Let Our Daughters Die for Us. And they encourage men to think about scriptures from Ephesians 5, they're talking about in scripture, husbands love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her.
Right.
And so they said this translates into modern day men sacrificing their own safety for the safety of women in their lives, not just wives, but their daughters too. So I really commend you guys, and I commend men like Owen Stratton and Mark Levecki for saying, no, we expect the men to get into, or to not get into the lifeboats. And they stay on the sinking ship and let the women and the children take their places.
Right.
Thank you for doing that.
I'm glad you brought up that illustration. I just want to make a point that Brian Anno has something to say. He's been really quiet, mainly because I haven't let him talk.
That never happens,
yeah. People who are making the argument for equality, it's like, oh, so you would have been okay for men, taking up all the space in lifeboats of the Titanic. I mean, that would have been okay? It's just, yeah. It's insane when we bring in the equality. Brian, you have a question. You want to jump in?
Well, Chelson, you mentioned Gibson and Strawn. I like you quoted them in a piece you wrote recently, and I really like what they said. Unlike a secular gender blurring culture, wow, great way to put that. We honor women and view them in the highest regard. Absolutely well said.
Agreed. Because it's not sexist to say that women shouldn't have to be registered for selective service and brought up in the draft. I do not find that offensive at all. Again, I'm so thankful for men who are saying this. It's not misogyny. I said in that piece, look, what misogyny looks like to me is men who are willing to sacrifice women's safety because they're worried about their political careers. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah. That's a great point.
You know, and you could see this coming in the debate about women in combat, which has actually been going on for a long time now.
Yeah. And
some of these discussions were taking place 30 and 40 years ago when, you know, the women's movement was kind of at its zenith, and there was a lot of discussion about the role of women and in connection with the military. And it's one thing for people to volunteer for something, like we have women who are volunteering to be in the armed forces, women who want to be in combat. It's quite another then, having established that that's okay, it's quite another then to say that we're going to draft women against their will to serve in these capacities. Although you could see it coming, there's a connection that should have been made when we were debating the former issue.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now we're debating policies that don't just we're not talking about career soldiers. We're talking about the general population, women who are maybe not physically fit. I know I told you earlier, I weigh 120 pounds. I am not probably even capable of carrying some of the equipment and machinery that I would need to carry in direct combat.
We'll just have to get you bulked up. That's end of problem.
Hey, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanhart, Brian Myers on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM. And on the line, we have Chelson Vaccari of the Institute on Religion and Democracy talking about basically the idea of women being drafted. So,
what a great idea.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. And going back just even women, you know, women voluntarily being in combat, I know there's some concerns about that as well, as far as troop morale, as far as women being able to, you know, meet some of the physical criteria. Because I served in the Army, and I remember some things I had to do. You know, I had a 70-pound rucksack, we had to do 15-mile road marches with, and certainly there are women who could do that, no doubt, but I think your average female would really have a hard time with that. And that's just training. That's not even combat.
Well, and they haven't talked about it much. They've managed to hush it up, you know, pretty well. But there were some horror stories from the first Gulf War with respect to our female troops who did get captured, and there were a few of them.
Right.
They got raped.
Yeah.
And I mean, nobody wants to talk about that, but it's an issue.
Well, and especially looking at the nature of our enemy now, who have little regard for women, their own women, let alone American women, I think it's a recipe for disaster.
I agree.
Yeah, I remember back in 2013, we were talking about the same issue. And I worked for Concerned Women for America at the time. Great organization. Still love those ladies. Mm-hmm. And I remember we came out opposing women being in direct combat for women's own safety, for unit cohesion, unit readiness, combat readiness. We didn't mean it to be demeaning for women. We did it because we, as women, worried about the well-being of national security and women and men and our children. And we got a ton of pushback on this. I mean, so it's kind of hard to dispute when women themselves are saying, we don't support this, but it's really funny that you still get a lot of hostility, and somehow it makes us less of women because we don't go along with the gender bending.
Right, well, it's just the denial of simple biology. Men and women are created differently. I mean,
and they say evangelicals don't look at science or respect science. I think that's very, very comical.
Yeah,
it is. That's a good point, Chelson.
<Basic science. laughs>
It's like, hello, there's a difference between the sexes. Shazam!
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's like women are just naturally not usually as big as men. I mean, you know, it just, again, just thinking some of the things that, that women would have to do in combat, just, you know, just instances where there's even, I don't think a lot of people realize, even in the Gulf War, you know, in desert, not the first, well, first Gulf War as well as the second Gulf War, there was actually a lot of hand-to-hand combat that goes on. There's a lot of close quarters combat that, you know, you mentioned Chelsea because you know, said you're 120 pounds. So we'll bring up your weight. I mean, you know, just, hey, yeah. So I'm trying to imagine somebody who's that weight going up against a guy who weighs 200 some pounds.
That's why I take physical defense classes.
Right.
Because I want to be able to run away from that person because I could not physically take him down.
Right.
If I had to hand to him.
Yeah, I mean,
but
yeah, it's just you know, obviously there's circumstances where I think there's women, you know, I know there are a lot of women that could probably beat me up, but just generally speaking, as just as a rule,
right, and that's what it goes back to. It's one thing for women who desire to be in those positions. It's another when we're talking about forcing
right.
young women to register themselves for a potential draft.
Yeah,
like my colleague Mark Levecki put well, look. Men and women are not the same, and treating us as if we are is not going to make us so.
That's right.
I really like that.
That is absolutely. Exactly right.
Well, Chelsea, our time is done. We appreciate you coming on. That is Chelsea Vicari. You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you guys for talking about this. Really, really appreciate it.
Very welcome.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Rizvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
In studio, we have a very special guest, Robert Rees, a friend of mine. I used to be on the torch until they decided to do some, I don't know, what the heck are they doing?
They're doing hip-hop.
Hip-hop, because yeah. We need another hip-hop station.
Of course.
Yeah, I totally, yeah, it totally made sense. So,
yeah.
And it's like kind of throwback hip-hop, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's
okay.
Throwback hip-hop.
All right, because, yeah, I wanted to listen to some Run DMC. And
yeah, you can get that on there.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, that's not why we brought you on to talk about the torch.
Talk about the transition from conservative talk to hip-hop.
Right, right.
Old-fashioned hip-hop.
Yep, yep. No, actually, Robert, you're running for U.S. Senate.
Yes, that's correct.
So the first question I always ask any candidate, why in the world are you doing that?
Peer pressure. Yeah, I gave into peer pressure.
Peer pressure.
A lot of people were saying run, and I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So, oh, no. You know, it's one of those things where I've actually always had an interest in running because I want to make a difference.
Right.
And the top of the list for me has always been fiscal stuff.
Okay.
And I look at the fiscal budget or the lack thereof in the federal level and the fiscal irresponsibility up there. And that's been driving me for many years now to try to get up there and do something.
Okay. And so not only are you running for U.S. Senate, but you're running as a Republican. Therefore, you are primarying Chuck Grassley.
That's right. Yeah. I'm the very first primary opponent he's ever had as an incumbent in D.C. in 41 years.
Gosh, I guess I didn't realize that. I know there was a threat a couple
of... A threat in 2010, I think
it
was.
Yeah, Ken Sorensen kind of wrote an open letter and hint, you know, hinted at it. Senator Grassley, yeah, he's a great guy. He's been around a long time. But, yeah, he's kind of hit and miss on some stuff. I mean, he had a vote on the education bill that you know troubled me.
Yes.
So... What's make your case against why Senator Reese rather than Senator Grassley?
Well, the case is term limits. I start with term limits.
Okay.
All right. So I just don't think anybody should be in office that long. And first of all, so it starts off with term limits. In fact, my website is reese4termlimits.com.
Okay.
So that's R-E-E-S, no E at the end, and the number 4, termlimits.com.
But I just want to jump in.
Go ahead.
But don't they already have natural term limits? You know, we have elections. Mm-hmm. So
that's why
I hear a lot.
We have an approval rating of Congress in the teens, like 14% approval rating, right, and a 94 to 96% reelection rate of members of Congress.
Robert, so, what would be the limits for a senator, in your opinion?
I think both of them do 12 years.
Yeah.
I'm thinking somewhere 8 to 12 years. Some people say 8 years for Congress, 12 years for senator. I say just make it both 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So two terms for the Senate.
Yep. And, you know, part of these, like if I could go up there and propose a bill, right, and try to get support for this, which one was proposed in the past by Senator Jim DeMint and only got like 23 votes, right? But there's a push right now for Convention of the States. I would like to try to help that movement be able to get something done. So
we're on board with that as well.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. So, but if I could be, you know, ideal thing, I want to put together a bill that says, okay, we're going to have term limits. Part of that term limit bill would also say no pension for members of the Senate or Congress as well.
Yeah. So, it's amazing that you go in one term and we like pay you for life.
You have to have 5 years.
5 years, okay.
But that's one term for a senator.
Yeah.
So, after that, it's ching.
That's right. I mean, it's on the federal employee retirement system. So if you serve one term, it's only like $20,000 a year. But still,
only.
But still, $20,000
for doing nothing,
for serving the people.
Yeah.
For a job that was supposed to be service. The fact that we even offer pension to me just shows, whoa, we're encouraging career politicians here.
Right.
I mean, why else would you provide a pension?
I mean, if you want to contribute to your own 401k or whatnot, that's, hey, you know, they got to retire too.
At some point. Yourself
absolutely
out.
Yeah. You could do your own program.
Right.
But we shouldn't have a government pension paying, a government salary paying them while they're retired. So it starts off with term limits for me. And then because even when I say, okay, nobody should be in office that long, you know, initially senators were chosen by the state legislatures. 17th Amendment changed that 103 years ago. 103 years ago, Senator Grassley now has been in D.C. as a senator for over a third of that period of time. Whereas before the 17th Amendment, senators only served for one or two times because...
legislators would get sick of them.
That's right. The legislators would go, I don't think you stood up for states' rights here. We're going to pull you back.
Yeah, I would love to see 17th Amendment be repealed just because...
Yeah.
You know, people think, oh, no, I want to vote on U.S. Senator. We get a vote on our representative, which actually I think I'd like to see more representatives, so they're even more local. But anyway, that's probably never going to happen. But, it'd be great to see senators appointed again by state legislators.
So I understand the reasoning for it,
right,
and the argument to say, hey, let the people choose. But the reality of it is once again, the reelection rate, 94, 96%. Mm-hmm. We look at 2010, where there was a sweeping number of Republicans that came in after Obamacare got implemented in the House.
Right.
In the House, we had this huge turnover. The Senate still kept the same.
Right.
Yet, like 75% of the states said, no, we don't like this. We don't want this to happen. If the state legislators had a say, they would have gotten their senators out of there.
Yeah.
You mentioned fiscal reasons. Talk to us about what your priorities are there in terms of what you want to see changed and contrast yourself with Senator Grassley in that regard.
Balanced budget, obviously, being one. And the biggest contrast I can put with myself and Senator Grassley is communication. The reason why I got into radio 7 years ago wasn't because I just thought it was cool and everything. I felt like I had pretty good communication skills. I was in real estate, and I did a lot of real estate presentations, and I did a lot of different webinars and all kinds of different things. And I wanted to do something where I could use my communication skills a lot more. And so I got into radio, and I had pretty good success in radio. And now I want to take my communication skills to D.C. It's because often conservatives lose the narrative they lose the battle of communication in Washington, D.C. So I want to go to Washington, D.C. and push a balanced budget amendment, I'll push for zero-based budgeting, push for a lot more fiscally responsible ideas, and use my communication skills to get that done, both behind the scenes, work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, but also in front of the media to try to promote these just common sense approaches to fiscal responsibility. So that's where I would I pretty much where I contrast myself in a lot of areas. It's just, hey, I'm going to be a voice for the people for sure. I'm going to use my communication skills to try to bridge the gap, try to have some common sense, and try to win the battle of communication for conservatives.
How do you respond to folks that would say, well, look, Senator Grassley is in a very powerful position, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
Absolutely. Term limits still. The whole system wasn't meant to have people just sitting there staying forever and ever and go, well, now they're in position of power. We can never take them out. It wasn't set up to be that way. Also, I look at it and go...
The idea here is that if it's not somebody like Senator Grassley in that position of power, then maybe it's somebody whose ideology is completely unacceptable.
Right.
Is in that position of power.
It's one of those the devil you know is worse is better than the devil you don't know type of situation. I get it. And the way I look at it is he is in a couple of very powerful positions, but I look at it and go, as long as the Senate has majority, we're still going to have a Republican in the head of those committees. And so that I'm satisfied with.
The Republican majority has done so much for us.
Haven't they, though?
Yes.
It's been wonderful, hasn't it?
We have 46 senators who are serving either their first or second term. And so we've actually had a pretty big turnover in recent years of newbies. And so it's time to get those out. Now, I look at the record. You brought up his voting record when it came to some education bill recently.
He voted to reauthorize No Child Left Behind. It was a horrible bill.
There's a few different things that you look at, but once again, I look at term limits on that. If you have an issue, you look at him and you go, hey, he voted to approve the omnibus bill on the floor, get it onto the floor vote, and then he voted no on the floor, but he should have voted no in the first place. Whatever it is, I go, term limits. This is why we need term limits. If you have a problem with his voting record, if you just don't like that he's been there for a long time, if you look at the, there's a couple of articles, one from Conservative Review, one from the Daily Signal earlier this week that challenged Grassley on his leadership abilities in the Judiciary Committee and said, here's the interesting thing. I actually had a call from a guy in D.C. who I grew up with. I didn't know he was working in D.C. He said, hey, I hear you're running for Senate. I said, yeah, I am. He says, congratulations, you know, good luck to you, blah, blah, blah. What are some of the challenges you're getting? What are some of the questions? I brought up one of them. I said, one of them I'm getting is that he's the head of the Judiciary, and we don't want to lose him as the head. Right. And I said, hey, as long as we have a Republican, doesn't that matter? And they go, no, we want to have an Iowan there. It's a pride thing. We want to have an Iowan at the head. He started laughing, and he goes, yeah, well, people here in Congress aren't very happy with Grassley right now. I said, why is that? He goes, well, have you seen what he's done as head of the Judiciary? I said, no, I guess I can look it up. He goes, let me save you some time. All he's done is approve Obama's liberal judges. And I was just quiet on the other end. I didn't
not,
know
not
that.
Much to say there.
I didn't know what else to say.
Yeah.
But I just say, term limits. That's all there is to say about it.
You're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and in studio we have Robert Rees, who's running for U.S. Senate. So how do you take down the guy who we have a tour of the state named after him, the full Grassley.
Yes.
How do you beat someone like that?
Well, I'm trying to look at this as a different race. I'm not wanting to beat Grassley. I'm not wanting to tear him down. I'm not wanting to disparage him. I respect him, and I want to run a respectable campaign. And so what I'm hoping is I can run a clean, nice, respectable campaign, and people will choose just younger leadership, maybe a little bit more, I guess you say, well, I want term limits. I want freedom. I want to get us back to the Constitution, have 10th Amendment rights for the states and try to get things back to the states. So I'm trying to run a positive campaign, and people go, you know what? Yeah, it is time. Let's have a change over here. But it is big shoes to fill, and that's why I respect him so much. We got the Grassley tour. We have the guy who has the longest consecutive records of votes in the Senate.
That's right.
These are big shoes to fill, and I recognize the weight of it, and I'm just hoping that people recognize it's time for a change.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that he was actually going to run again. I thought eventually you get to a point you'd think that he'd want to retire.
Yeah, I do want to share this because I've had a few people say, well, whatever you do, Robert, don't bring up his age because you look like an ageist. I'm not an ageist. I respect my elders. But I'm not going to...
That's good. That's good. Shane, did you catch that? Shane, you want to say that again, Robert?
I respect your elders. Yes.
I respect
point
my
taken,
elders.
Brian. Thank you.
But I do want to say about the age, because age does matter. I have a lot of friends in the medical field, and they go, look, when you're 83 years old, your health can change on a second. And if he decided to retire, even if it wasn't because of health, if he just decided, you know what, I'm 85, I want to spend the last, you know, whatever, 10, 15 years of my wife, and he decides to retire, a lot of people don't know this, there will not be a special election to replace the senator. The governor appoints the replacement in a Senate election. And so I'm
Terry Branstad, we know that would be a raging conservative.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's already looking at me, but...
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to give Iowans an opportunity to go, look, you take a chance that he's going to retire in the next 6 years and the governor will appoint his replacement, or you take a chance on me, a conservative that wants to bring back 10th Amendment and, you know, bring back states' rights and try to get us to back to the original intent of the Constitution, have term limits. And so giving Iowans a chance to choose right now instead of having the governor choose in the next 6 years.
Right, right. Yeah, a governor who should have retired, appointing a senator. Anyway, there's a story.
There's a blog post there somewhere.
That's right.
I think so. Yeah, so, okay, beyond fiscal issues, what are some other issues that things you'd like to make change?
Well, one of them is our tax system. Once again, it kind of deals with finances, but our tax system is so convoluted, so difficult.
Okay.
And so I'm big for the fair tax or the flat tax. I'll take either one of them. My first day in there, I would find both bills and I'd sign them both. Whichever one goes through first, I'm happy with.
Right.
So we have to change our tax code. Other things, I hate the government picking winners and losers.
Okay.
Hate it. So I'm very...
So RFS gone?
Gone.
Okay.
Yes.
But how would you win an election in Iowa
where the tall corn grows,
you know, being against, why are you against ethanol?
I was on the radio for how many years now here in the Midwest, and I always railed against the RFS, and guess what? All my listeners agreed, so I know that there's... And we
saw
somebody recently.
Des Moines, because you know if you're out in the rural Iowa, sure,
yeah. We'll ask Ted Cruz about that.
How
it lost him the election here
in Iowa,
because he stood up against Governor Branstad and RFS. No, so I just can't stand the government picking winners and losers, and I do feel like that's one of the reasons why I want to change tax structure first,
right?
Because tax structure is one of those ways that you give back to your donors, the way you give back to different individuals and stuff. Once again, going back to term limits, one of the reasons why I really like term limits is because it gets rid of career politicians.
Yep.
Because career politicians, no matter what, at some point, if you're a career politician, you're going to make a decision that affects your career instead of defending the Constitution.
Great. Hey, thanks, Robert, for coming on. Check out Rees for Term Limits. Is that the numeral 4?
Yes, numeral 4.
Numeral 4, fortermlimits.com. This is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers. You'll see Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
And now it's time for our news rundown, otherwise known as News You Can Use. First up, this is from MSNBC. Michael Bloomberg is apparently thinking that we need him to save us all.
I was thinking the same thing. Save me from my big gulp.
By the way,
saturated fats.
MSNBC didn't say that. I did. But anyway, yep. The political world is still digesting the results from the Granite State, where self-described socialist Bernie Sanders and nativist Donald Trump, each blew away rivals thanks to deep party support. But one consequence could be to coax former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg to come off the sidelines.
Because that's just what we need. Yeah. Two billionaires in the race. Yay!
The thinking after New Hampshire, as described by a source familiar with the mayor's plans, is that the results were anything but discouraging. The mayor sees a wider path if Trump or Ted Cruz scores the GOP nomination, both of whom appear well-positioned after Tuesday. As for the Democrats, it's not clear whether his thinking would be affected either way. Bloomberg, the billionaire founder of Bloomberg LP, suggested earlier this week that he might enter the arena on a centrist platform due to his disappointment with both parties' frontrunners. He explored a similar run in 2008 before ultimately deciding against it.
A centrist platform. All you have to do is look at his record as mayor of New York to know that he is a flaming liberal.
Yeah, well, in New York, he's a centrist. All right,
here's a centrist. No, Rudy Giuliani would be a centrist.
There you go. Here's his quote. I find the level of discourse and discussion distressingly banal and an outrage and an insult to voters.
Well, of course, that's all true.
I found
his, but he's not going to fix it.
I know. I found his tenure as New York mayor as outrage and an insult to the voters, too. So,
well, yeah. You know, this is a guy who can't wait to make sure that we don't get to have our Slurpees.
Yep.
And that
no saturated fats. No,
yeah. Nobody gets to use Crisco.
Or guns.
People need to keep
in mind, if he gets it, he is one of the most anti-Second Amendment people there is.
Well, look, this guy, in terms of what he wants to do, he epitomizes the concept of a nanny state.
Right.
He really does. His intentions are all wonderful, okay? But he wants to control your choices in life.
Yep.
He is a statist. Okay.
Absolutely.
The Oregon standoff is over. The four remaining holdouts of the armed protest group that has occupied a federal wildlife refuge in Oregon for the past 41 days turned themselves in peacefully on Thursday. But the end of the standoff did not come without drama.
Of course.
After the first three protesters surrendered to authorities at around 9:40 a.m. local time, the last occupier, a guy by the name of David Fry, initially resisted, but just after 11, Fry turned himself in to the FBI. Fry had said on a live audio webcast that he was feeling suicidal and would die a free man. At one point, he said he was pointing a gun at his head, and he ranted about abortion, UFOs, the government chemically mutating people,
okay,
and Syria.
I think watching a little too much X-Files.
I'm taking my stand. This isn't something I'm going to back away from, Fry said. But eventually, after requesting listeners yell hallelujah, he walked out to meet authorities. The FBI confirmed that all four protesters were in custody. No one was injured and no shots were fired, an FBI statement said. Now, I want to say right out of the gate, kudos for our federal law enforcement. In this case, they did it right.
Right.
And they obviously have a guy here who's not terribly stable. Mm-hmm. But
that might be putting it loud.
But nothing horrible happened here. Yep. They showed patience and they got through it and no more bloodshed.
Right.
So kudos to them. But I also want to say that the fact that these guys, this guy in particular, might have been a Kuchberger, okay? This guy probably passes the Kuchberger test. But that does not, so one thing I want to make plain, this does not in any way, shape, manner, or form suggest that the Hammond family does not have a legitimate beef, no pun intended, with the federal government
right.
and the way that they've been treated. And, of course, their situation is what set this whole set of circumstances in motion. But anyway.
Right. Did you hear that Franklin Graham was possibly instrumental in
yes.
these guys to
yes.
give up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I think he spent a week or something
cool.
talking to these guys.
Yeah.
So good for him as well.
Right.
Okay. Economic storm clouds are gathering. This is from Reuters. Stock indexes worldwide stumbled on Thursday on fears over the health of the global economy, with banking shares slumping on both sides of the Atlantic, where safe haven 10-year Treasury yields hit their lowest since 2012. Concern over sluggish global growth and doubts over central banks' ability to support the global economy pushed the U.S. benchmark S&P 500 index and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down more than 10% for the year. And the article goes on to talk about what's going on in Europe. But here's a good quote from a guy by the name of Steven Englander. He's a managing director and global head of G10 FX strategy at Citigroup. He says, the key driver in this immense pessimism is in asset markets. Unwillingness to hold anything but the safest assets. Translation, everybody's scared to death that everything's going to crash and they're going to lose their
right.
Their values in a big-time way.
Yeah.
This has a lot of people really concerned from what I've read on the web. Janet Yellen, it is speculated, is actually considering lowering rates again, having just raised them.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of concern out there about the possibility of us slipping into a big, nasty recession again.
Man, we might have a brokered convention. At least some people
yes.
think that.
According to the Capital Weekly, pundits, campaign managers, and the politicians themselves expressed doubt about the possibility. Not as much as previously, but still doubt. It's hard for me to see why a round of brokering in Cleveland isn't the most likely outcome, says Daniel Henninger, deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal's editorial page. None of these candidates looks likely to pull away and capture the majority of primary delegates before the party's nominating convention in Cleveland next July.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
A lot of these early states are no longer winner takes all. They're giving out delegates proportionally. It's a possibility. Here's the thing. That's not an outcome we should hope for. Because
No, I agree.
Who's the last candidate that that came out of a broken convention who won? Because
mm-hmm.
that invariably turns off segments of the party. Not that I'm in favor of Donald Trump. Here's my thing. What I'm thinking, if Ted Cruz or somebody doesn't start showing some momentum, if Ted Cruz, say, tanks in South Carolina and doesn't do well in SEC primary on Super Tuesday.
No, I don't see that happening, though. Do you?
No, I don't. I think he's
not
gonna
in
do
South
well.
Carolina.
I think he's going to do well. I'm not going to predict he's going to win, but I think he's going to do well. And I think he'll do well on Super Tuesday. But if he, for some reason, he doesn't, he's the one best positioned to take out Trump. I think.
Right.
Trump runs away with it.
Right. Right.
So. That's what I'm thinking anyway. So hopefully we can avoid a broker convention. Even though I don't like Donald, I'd still rather let the people have
we don't need this
rather than a convention. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
You and your spouse are like two chemicals that become combustible when mixed. Your actions and reactions just tend to set each other off. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Early in your marriage, the differences brought fireworks that brought spark and energy to your lives. But the addition of busyness and bitterness have created a concoction that simply explodes and rocks the foundation of your marriage. Understanding how you and your spouse respond when threatened can bring stability to your volatile mixture. One tendency is to become aggressive and to push for solution. We call them attackers. The other is to run from potential conflict. We call them escapers. Two attackers have quick combustion, but the smoke clears quickly. But if you have an attacker and an escaper, the explosion takes longer, but the fallout can be more devastating. For healthy chemistry with your spouse, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Banner, Brian Myers. Be sure to check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com because, hey, we blog too. And actually, you put up a piece this week.
Oh my goodness, Brian's
that's
been
two
writing.
Two weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row, I know.
This is like a minor miracle.
Way to go, Brian.
So, I appreciate that. Check us out. We've got some good coverage of, we're still keeping on talking about, even though the Iowa caucus is over, we're still looking ahead at New Hampshire. We looked at New Hampshire, we're looking at South Carolina. So we'll continue coverage of the continuing presidential race as well as Iowa politics. Also, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us on those websites, but our handle is CAFF Thoughts, C-A-F-F Thoughts. Anyway, we'd appreciate it if you keep in touch.
Okay, this is an excerpt from a piece by Mark Tooley of IRD. We've had Mark on the radio with us before. I'll just read some of this. Princeton Seminary President Craig Barnes, former pastor of evangelical-leaning National Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C., urges in Christian Century, I'm not familiar with that publication, but Christian Century, that mainline Protestants stop obsessing over their decline. And so Barnes goes on to say this. Most of the people who used to fill the pews of the mainline congregations long ago decided that the church has little relevancy to their souls, which are worn down by work, family, and world that seems to be coming apart at the seams. They didn't leave in a huff. They didn't nail up 95 theses that called for reform. They wandered away and found that a Sunday morning spent with the New York Times or cheering for a child's soccer game came closer to a Sabbath than what they found in a sanctuary. Little good comes from getting fixated on the empty pews. The mainline Protestant church has to stop fretting about its future. The anxiety takes up the air and leaves the church too lethargic to offer anything to the world. The alternative response is for the church to do what it's always done at its best, what it did from the beginning. Stop thinking about its future and sacrifice itself to its mission. But, Mark Tooley asks, what is the mainline church's mission?
Right.
Well, Barnes doesn't actually say, and neither does the mainline church typically in any compelling way. Tooley goes on, but there's no pledge from Christ who promised that the church will prevail. That mainline Protestantism will necessarily have any future. Mainline Protestantism may have served its purpose across four centuries in America and will just fade into obscurity. I mean, that's sad, but it's true.
Well, that's what we're seeing in Europe.
It's true. Barnes seems to evade admission of what had happened to sideline the mainline, and seems to counsel a form of continued denial.
Right.
Meanwhile, his own Presbyterian Church USA, under its current rate of decline, will not exist 20 years from now, except as empty buildings with endowments.
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah, that is ouch. It kind of surprises me, since he is evangelical-leaning, that he would not consider... people aren't just leaving to go read the New York Times on Sunday morning. I mean, people are leaving. I know many people who have left and found a home within an evangelical church because they left because they wanted to hear the word.
Well, forgive me too. I when he said evangelical leaning, I was kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I'd be curious to know what his criteria were for that characterization. Look, at the end of the day, this denomination lost the gospel decades ago.
Right.
Decades ago. As a matter of fact, in the 1920s, they said it wasn't necessary to believe in the virgin birth. It wasn't necessary to believe in the deity of Christ.
Right.
So I mean, this ought to surprise no one. If you lose the gospel, you will fade into obscurity.
Surprise, surprise. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.
See you, everybody.